Our next guest on the program is an associate professor of political science at the University of Delaware. Her work has been published in the American Journal of Political Science, the Journal of Politics, and Public Opinion Quarterly. She's also, I must add, since Maine plays them in football, a proud Richmond Spider. We're happy to welcome to the program Dr. Joanne Miller. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Go Spiders.
There you go. I love it down there. Love their stadium. I love it when we get to go to Richmond every other year. It's one of my favorite road cities.
It's a great school.
Well, let's talk about conspiracy theories that seemingly are everywhere these days. And let's start with the question, what is it that draws people to embrace these theories?
There are a couple of things. One in particular that's really prevalent right now with regard to the pandemic is uncertainty. So when people feel powerless or they feel a loss of control or uncertain about their lives, they tend to explain the events that might have sort of given rise to that uncertainty. They try to explain those events. And one of the ways that they sometimes end up explaining them is with a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I've always, going back to the JFK conspiracy theories through the years, I've always felt that people have a difficult time with things that can't be answered simply in a world that isn't black and white.
Absolutely, especially when they're big negative events. We don't typically come up with conspiracy theories to explain positive events, right? And so it's big, scary, negative events, often surprising events. We seek to find answers, seek to find explanations. And it's better for us to feel like the coronavirus is being spread by 5G towers, for example, then because it gives us something to fight. I've been joking with people saying that we can fight the tower. That we can fight, right? We can't fight a natural occurring virus that we don't have a cure for yet. But if we believe conspiracy theories around the origin that gives us a villain or something to fight, we can reassert some control.
My producer just made this point, and I think it's a great one. Could these conspiracy theories, in a sense, be our new mythology?
They can be. It depends on really how well they take hold. Conspiracy theories have been around, you know, forever, and so it depends on really how deeply ingrained they get, how they take hold, and how much they sort of connect to and spread through other parts of our lives. I don't think we're seeing that yet, and I hope we don't, but I guess anything's possible these days.
Well, recently we were all inundated, anybody on social media, with the plandemic video. I didn't want you to have to watch that. I hope you didn't, but social media is certainly a breeding ground for these conspiracy theories and allows them to reach a much larger audience than ever before.
That's true. Whereas social media does enable them to spread further and faster, and it gives anybody the ability to throw a conspiracy theory up against the internet wall and see if it sticks. What we do know is that the psychological and political needs that give rise to these conspiracy theories in the first place haven't changed. And so whether people believe them more now than they did pre-internet, it's probably not the case, but they certainly are more exposed to them now, and we're all exposed to many more of them now than we ever were before.
And of course, these days, too, there are fairly large media outlets that play into this and amplify some of those theories.
There are, and we also have a current president who seems to traffic in conspiracy theories more than any other president that we've had in our past. And so this can also give some credence to some of these beliefs in a way that we haven't seen before.
We're talking with Dr. Joanne Miller here on Downtown. Is there a profile of the typical person who believes in these conspiracy theories, or is that too tough to do? Is it too widespread?
So it is very widespread, not just in the U.S., but in countries across the globe. There aren't really that many demographic characteristics that consistently predict. The two that tend to are education people lower in education tend to be more likely to believe conspiracy theories, and also ethnic minorities tend to believe conspiracy theories more. I don't think this has anything to do with education per se or being a minority per se, but if we go back to powerlessness, uncertainty, loss of control, those are folks who might particularly feel more chronically powerless in our society, and we do see that they are more likely to believe conspiracy theories, but no effect on age, on gender, on income. Pretty much education and race are the ones that pop out.
So the idea of people who feel like they've lost their parents or their grandparents to Fox News, maybe that's a myth too.
A little bit. We do know that when it comes, for example, to COVID conspiracy theories, Republicans are more likely to believe them these days than Democrats. That doesn't necessarily mean that Republicans are more conspiratorial in general, but certainly right now, when we have a Republican president who's being criticized quite a bit for his handling of the virus, it makes sense that Republicans might want to look for explanations for why the virus is occurring and why we don't have a handle on it yet, that in some sense sort of absolve the current president. We know, for example, that when Democrats lose an election, they're more likely to think that election fraud was the culprit, just like when Republicans lose an election. So it's kind of like this cyclical, when your political worldview is threatened, again, you're more likely to potentially believe conspiracy theories.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask, how strong a role does blame play in all of this?
It can play somewhat of all conspiracy theories have a villain. And so to the extent that you're seeking for an alternative explanation that scapegoats, then yes, you're certainly blaming somebody or something for the rise of whatever negative event you're trying to explain.
Well, for so many people, they're dealing with friends or family members who are buying into some of these conspiracy theories, and so the response is, well, it's a challenging one, and one of the things that you've said is that ridicule doesn't work.
Ridicule doesn't work. Calling somebody a conspiracy theorist doesn't work. Nobody likes to be lectured at. So none of these or mocked or ridiculed. So whereas I can say that I don't have any silver bullets for what are the magic words that you can say to somebody to get them to not believe a conspiracy theory. There are certainly things that we know don't work, and they're common sense things that don't work in any ordinary, everyday conversation with somebody. But potentially things that can open up a conversation that could lead to someone sort of self-realizing that maybe this conspiracy theory is not actually what's happening. Being open to having a conversation, coming at it from an empathetic perspective, recognizing that some of these beliefs do serve a very real psychological need. And so knocking down the belief leaves that person with that uncertainty that is now back, and the anxiety that went along with that is now much more present than it was before. So lectures, pointing out logical inconsistencies tend not to work as well as being open and empathetic to a conversation. But then sometimes we just have to step back and say, I can't debunk this one with this person, and we have to recognize that, save yourself sometimes in these conversations because they can end up devolving into a much more contentious discussion where people dig in more than they might have been originally.
Do you see this getting worse over the next several months as we get closer and closer to the election?
There's a potential for it to do so. There's a potential for, we already know that President Trump has been espousing some of these conspiracy theories right now. Whether he actually believes them or not, or whether it's a rhetorical strategy, I can't say. But to the extent that the virus continues to be serious through the fall, if we have another flare-up, for example, it's possible that he might use this type of rhetoric, or some of his surrogates might use this type of rhetoric again to sort of excuse, say, you know, this isn't my fault.
What's the long-term danger? Obviously, we see what it's done to political discourse, but does it jeopardize the democracy at all?
It's possible, and this is one of the reasons that I study why people believe, to try to get a better handle on how we can sort of correct these beliefs. To the extent that these beliefs, and we know, can decrease trust in government, can decrease trust. It's like a cycle, right? You have a little bit of distrust to begin with, which makes you able to believe one of these conspiracy theories, but then believing the conspiracy theory makes you trust less. And to the extent that cycle continues, and, you know, if you don't trust that the opposing political party, if you believe that they're engaging in conspiracy theories, how can you cross the aisle and work with them or support compromise when you fundamentally believe the other side is conspiratorial villains? So it can be problematic. Problematic to say the least.
It is a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much. Love your perspective on this. Dr. Joanne Miller from the University of Delaware, also one of my favorite places to visit as well. Great campus there, too. Thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it. Be well, and we'll hope to talk with you again sometime.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Joanne Miller, University of Delaware, with us on Downtown.